Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. In 2015, Pope Francis issued a rousing call to stop climate change known as Laudato Si. The Pope traced a path through the Church's history, connecting our present-day concerns with a latent tradition of environmentalism. His diagnosis was both social and environmental, railing against a throwaway culture that turns reality into an object simply to be used and controlled. Even if you're not part of the church or any church, it's fascinating and beautiful. But Pope Francis is not some guy with a Substack. He's the Pope, and he leads a massive organization with real power across the world. We talk with a key member of the Vatican team implementing the Pope's environmental vision right after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Since issuing his encyclical on climate change, Pope Francis has continued to develop the Church's ecological thinking through another letter called Laudato Deum, which was issued at the end of last year. Pope Francis called into question what he called the technocratic paradigm, this idea held by quite a few people around the Bay Area, actually, that we can just invent our way out of climate change without any collective restructuring of, quote, the question of human power, its meaning and its limits. But the Catholic Church is not just a publisher or an idea. It's a huge organization with over a billion followers and thousands of workers. So when Pope Francis issued Laudato Si and called for opening new dialogues and implementing its policy proposals, there was an infrastructure that went to work building out the program. We're joined this morning by Pope Francis's right-hand man on all things climate, Father Jostrom Isaac Carithedam, Chair of Philosophy of Science and Director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. Welcome, Father Josh.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. Good morning, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for joining us from the Vatican. We really appreciate it. So I remember seeing the encyclical come out in 2015, and it caused quite a stir inside and outside the church. Why was Laudato Si such a big deal when it first arrived on the global scene?
Thank you, Alex. Brilliant question to begin with. I would say, to begin with, the person of Pope Francis, you know, the message is so important, was so important. But I think also the messenger counted. And I think of someone like Mahatma Gandhi, you know, and I think Pope Francis is the Gandhi of today. So, message like this coming from him really had a huge impact.
I mean, before Laudato Si and Pope Francis, how much had past popes and other church authorities talked about environmental issues, you know, generally, or maybe climate specifically? I mean, did the church have a strong public environmental stance?
Yeah, I would say yes, in the sense like we could go back to Pope John Paul II, who in 1990 wrote a letter called Peace with God the Creator, Peace with Creation. So that was sort of the very first major statement. Then very often someone who is underrated is Pope Benedict. You know, he was called the Green Pope, and he was the one who was keen to put solar panels on the main audience hall of the Vatican, the Paul VI hall. And so people like us expected an encyclical. An encyclical is the highest form of papal teaching. So we expected Pope Benedict to come out with something. But now looking back, you know, I personally feel happy that, you know, that Providence kept it for Pope Francis. Because it coming from him really had a very, very major impact.
So before we get more deeply into the ideas behind the encyclical and that Pope Francis has been developing over this past decade, thought maybe you could tell us about your role in all this. Like, for people who are not familiar with Catholic organizations, are you like the executive vice president of climate change stuff in the Vatican, or how do you think about your role?
No, thank you, Alex. No, very, no, it's a very humble, modest rule. As you said at the beginning, the Catholic Church is a huge community. We are like over 1.3 billion, nearly 1.4 billion people. So the Pope does count a lot. And the Vatican City State is the smallest country in the world. But in terms of, being a leader of 1.4 billion people, Pope's voice does count. And the Pope has sort of a government, what we call the Holy See, and it has many departments, and probably the most important department is the Secretariat of State. And they sort of, they are the central ministry, so to say. Then there are other departments, like the one I work in is called the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development. So we have a section for economy, we have a section for ecology, we have a section for health, we have a section for migration, a section for charity. Then there are other departments for education, for priests and bishops, and then for culture, and like any other government. So I was so when I came into the Dicastery in 2017, immediately after Laudato Si was published, we began a new section called for ecology, and I have had the joy of coordinating the section on ecology. So, in the name of Pope Francis, we were coordinating, all initiatives in the church related to climate, related to ecology, and Laudato Si is not just about climate. I mean, it's about, if what I liked about Laudato Si was that it changed the paradigm. It changed the way we look at these issues, because Laudato Si has a beautiful subtitle. Laudato Si, as we know, it goes to Pope Francis takes a word from Saint Francis, his Canticle of Creatures. It's also called the Canticle of Brother Sun, that Saint Francis wrote in 1024, imagine, a year before, 2 years before his death. But he was blind and he was very sickly. And a blind man writes a hymn, a song, singing to the sun and to the moon and sister water and brother wind and to natural elements. And that was the first, Italian hymn or poetry ever written. So, and that's very popular. And Saint Francis even, gave, taught his friars how to sing it. So, Laudato Si, we and may the Lord be praised, and praise be to God for brother sun, sister moon, and that's a very popular hymn. So Pope Francis takes that Laudato Si, it's the beginning of that hymn, which again I think struck a chord, because Saint Francis is loved all around the world. I mean, for simplicity. And he was called the second Christ, in history. And then Laudato Si has a beautiful subtitle called "Care for Our Common Home." So it is it's the, it, we know we care about people. We care about something that we love. So it's more than stewardship. And churches talk. We're talking many years about stewardship. Organizations used to talk about conservation. But then Pope Francis says, no, it's much deeper. It's about caring. Then, the word common home. And, home is the sweetest word, I think. I mean, of course, the sweetest word is mother or father. But then, mother and father are found in a home. And home is the environment, is the ambient that brings us all together. Then he said, but remember, it's our common home. So it's everyone's home. And Alex, I teach cosmology for nearly, I've been teaching cosmology for nearly 20, 25 years. And I began a course last month here at the Salesian University in Rome. And it's so fascinating, the universe is so big. I mean, its diameter is 93 billion light years from one end to the other. And we have at least 2 trillion galaxies, like our own Milky Way. So the Earth is so tiny. But then even we cosmologists are surprised about the capacity of our planet to be at home, because you it's very difficult to find complex life. I mean, it's a debatable because the universe is so big,
But
it's so
certainly within
vast.
our solar system, we have not found too much complex life. In fact, none at all.
So, and we are like amazed how Earth is a home. And that's something that pains me also, because I think for too many years we spoke about the environment or climate as one issue. But what people don't realize is that we are pulling down the pillars of our home, or it's like, my house is on fire, and we are going about as though nothing has happened. I mean, it's, house is burning, my house is, our common home is burning, and we are not worried. And that's, I think, the big difference that Pope Francis made. He said it's about care for our common home. And the very first chapter is entitled, it's got six chapters. The first chapter is, what is happening to our common home? What is happening to our common home? And he was advised by, I was, some of us are involved in the encyclical. When this comes out of the name of Pope Francis, but Laudato Si has had hundreds of people working on it. And the experts. And the first chapter was prepared mainly by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. That's an academy that goes back to Galileo Galilei. I mean, it's even older than the Royal Society of London, so the oldest scientific academy in the world. And I have gone occasionally for some of their meetings, and most of them are Nobel laureates or some of the top best scientists in the world. And I don't know if you're familiar with his name. He's on on the East Coast. There's Veerabhadra, and on the West Coast, I meant to say, Veerabhadra Ramanathan, who teaches at Berkeley. He's a member of the Academy of Sciences. And I remember in one meeting, hearing him, he said, "I, as a scientist, can defend every word of Laudato Si." So to hear from a climate scientist was encouraging. So the That's the first point. Like, I mean, it's about our common home.
We're talking about Pope Francis's call to action on climate change called Laudato Si and follow-up Laudato Deum. Joined by his right-hand man on all things climate, Father Jostrom Isaac Karithadam, Chair of Philosophy of Science and Director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. Recently, the church began to offer an intensive online course dedicated to integral ecologies for the first time in English. You can enroll through the end of March. You can just search online. Online course on integral ecology. I promise you will find it out there. We want to hear from listeners too. I mean, if you're Catholic, how do you feel about the Pope's stance and call to action on climate change? How do you think the church has handled their response to climate change? If you aren't religious, how does what you're hearing resonate with you? Is it surprising to you? Do you find it inspiring? Do you not find it inspiring? You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. The email is forum@kqed.org, or you can find us on any of our social channels, of course, where we're KQED Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about Pope Francis' call to action on climate change with the right-hand man on all things climate, Father Jostrom Isaac Karithadam. Father Josh is the Chair of Philosophy of Science and Director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. Father Josh, in the United States, you know this obviously, climate change is a highly politicized issue, major split in particular with Republicans minimizing the dangers of climate change as well as kind of slow playing any kind of action. Has that been true? Do you see the same kinds of splits around the world, or do you think the U.S. is kind of unique in these problems?
Thank you, Alex. Great question. I would say, working at the Vatican, the advantage is you work with the entire world. So we do, different countries, different churches, responding also differently to Laudato Si. Before I come to the U.S., if you were to ask me, maybe which is the country that, or the country that have responded, very well to Laudato Si, I'm reminded of the Philippines, for example. All the 85 dioceses in the Philippines, they have joined the Laudato Si Action Platform, for example. And I think it's also because they are affected by the climate crisis. You think of the 2013 Haiyan hurricane they had, 13,000 people lost their lives and 13 million people were rendered homeless. And with the climate crisis, we know that 93% of all the heat has gone to the oceans. So oceans are heating up. So we have more powerful hurricanes and more intense and also more frequently. So I think that's an important perspective. Coming to the U.S., I've been to the U.S. so many times and I have very, very good friends in the U.S., some of them very close to my heart. And I always found it difficult to understand the situation because, when we go to the Philippines, so I've been to Africa several times. I originally hate from India. And their climate, since few years, I don't really notice, Pope Francis speaks not of climate change, but of climate crisis. In fact, last year when he published Laudate Deum, which is an apostolic exhortation, sort of Laudato Si part two, the subtitle is On the Climate Crisis, because I think that really conveys the message that we are in a crisis, I think one reason is probably the polarization that we have had, and also the way the so-called green groups we took forward this message. We said it's an environmental issue. So it's something with climate. But then, as I said at the beginning, it's about our common home. So it is not about, Republicans or Democrats or people on the right or left side of the spectrum. A common home is of everyone. So I feel every time.
But Father Josh, what if it actually is also that, right? It actually is like a political struggle, which I know also happens inside the Catholic Church as well, between maybe people who are more conservative on these issues and people who are less, who are more pro action on dealing with the climate crisis.
You're right, and we see it also in the church. I had Cardinal Turkson, who was the head of our dicastery till a couple of years ago, and he used to tell us that he had met ambassadors or scientists who had read Laudato Si from cover to cover more than once, and he had also met bishops who probably never. So we have this problem, but then the thing is, I think we need to overcome that, because on an issue like this, I tell my colleagues, we will succeed if we get everyone on board. So one thing we try to do is, in fact, Laudato Si is interesting. One study showed that the encyclical mentions climate 14 times in the entire, it's a long encyclical, the longest of Pope Francis. But the word poor is mentioned 59 times. And I can see why in Pope Francis, we made a Laudato Si movie, and I had the joy of being with him an entire morning, being with Pope Francis, shooting the movie. And he said, when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, and he thought, the environment has nothing to do with our faith, like many bishops or many of us could still think. He said, what has it to do with my faith? Environment is another thing. Then he said he happened to go to the Amazon and saw what indigenous communities were going through. And that was his moment of conversion. So I think it's also the experience we make. And another, with the poor, I think another thing that can touch us is, what world are we living for our children? for future generations. In 2 years ago, before the climate summit in Glasgow, we had an interfaith meeting at the Vatican, convened by Pope Francis. Nearly 40 faith leaders came for the meeting, the Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, and then all major faith leaders, including indigenous faith leaders, were there. And Pope Francis, welcome to everyone. But what still rings in my ears is I mentioned, the Pontifical Academy of Sciences, its president, Professor Joachim von Braun, a scientist. He said, I listened to all of you. Thank you for what you shared. But he said, I think of my grandchild, Emma, who just, we just celebrated her birthday. Then he said, as a scientist, I know that by the time Emma will be as old as I am, nearly 60 years old, that some parts of the world will be simply uninhabitable. Mm. And then I, last year, when the IPCC report came out, it said that right now, 1% of the planet's surface is unlivable. It's so hot, think of places like Sahara or Saudi Arabia, or, especially on the tropical belt. And the report said, if you don't do anything, by 2060, 19% of the planet's surface will be unlivable. And so, when I think of, young people, future generations, so I think, that probably helps us to transcend our division.
Brother Josh, let's bring in some of our callers from around the Bay Area here. Rebecca in Sunnyvale, welcome.
Hi, I wanted to know about two questions. One is it true that the Pope has a master's degree in chemistry? And the second is, of all the encyclicals, this one begins with science instead of theology, and I'm wondering what the upshot of that is.
Yeah, thanks, Rebecca. For people who haven't read this out there, even if you're not religious at all, it really does make for fascinating reading, and it has almost more of like a historical theology at the top, but then it goes into science, of course. Thank you for that question, Rebecca. What do you, Father Josh, just on the factual point about the MA in chemistry, the master's degree in chemistry?
Thank you, Rebecca. And brilliant question. And you are true. Pope Francis has a degree in chemistry, and he studied to become a chemist. So he knows this stuff. I mean, it's not in climate science, but it's in chemistry. So he understands the scientific world. And the second thing is, as Rebecca said, doesn't begin with theology. It begins with science. And let's see if I can say a word on that. The methodology that Laudato Si adopts is what we call see, judge, act. So the first chapter of the encyclical is, what is the situation? And it's a very realistic way of, approaching a problem. What's the situation? And so there he speaks with pollution. In fact, he begins with pollution, because in 1962, Rachel Carson, the Silent Spring, one of the first people to speak about pollution. Then he speaks about the climate crisis, then the biodiversity loss, then the water scarcity. So it's all centered around what's happening to our common home. Mm-hmm. Then the next step is judge. So the second chapter is a theological treatise, so to say. It's entitled The Gospel of Creation. And gospel in Greek is evangelion, the good news of creation, that this world is not just a world or matter. It is God's creation. So that gives us a tool to judge. Then third chapter is the human roots of the crisis. Pope says, if I'm sick, why am I sick? If I have cancer, how did I catch this tumor? So then Pope Francis, the third chapter is philosophical. It's really solid philosophy. He doesn't mention Heidegger, but then he analyzes Guardini. I know a bit of Heidegger, so I see a lot of Heidegger there. He's saying that the problem begins with modernity, and he speaks of three things: the famous anthropocentrism, that we have become the absolute center. Then we have reduced nature to just matter, a mechanized vision. Nature has lost its tables, is no more animate, symbolic value, just stuff that we can use and throw. And then the famous dualism, between humanity and the natural world. So that's a brilliant chapter. Then the last three chapters is what we can do. Then the fourth chapter is the most beautiful poetical, called integral ecology, that everything is connected, that we are interdependent, that we are interrelated. Then the fifth chapter is about lines of action. He speaks at the political level, at the economic level, what can we do? And the sixth chapter, education, spirituality. So the last three chapters is about action. First chapter about seeing. Second and third about judging. How did we get here? So it's a very, very comprehensive talk.
Let's bring in Chris in Santa Clara. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, good morning. I hold a master's degree in catechetics and pastoral ministries from Santa Clara University, which is a Jesuit university in the South Bay. And my question is how to communicate from the Vatican down to bishops and then obviously down to parishes to come up with a way to at least study or implement the document. Because what I've been finding is that there are many pastors who express their oppositionalism not by coming out against the document, which I think these are both wonderful documents, by the way, beautiful documents. But the fight is that they're shelved and that local leaders and folks, you know, there's thousands of us out there who've got, you know, these advanced Catholic theology degrees trying to go out there and kind of be that in between. We're kind of that bridge, I guess, between the magisterium and the laity. But there's no embracing of implementing at least a study of these documents. And, you know, with 3,000 dioceses across the world, 200 of them in the United States, every bishop reports directly to the Pope. So extremely horizontal organization, right? I don't think you're going to give the details, Alexis and Josh. However, Father Josh, if the Vatican was very clear that they would like some type of local implementation strategy in each diocese across the world, then at least that would give people a chance to say, hey, you know what? Let's open this book. Let's study it. It's going to be studied differently in the Philippines than in Nairobi than in Santa Clara. But saying we got to open the book.
Yeah. Hey, Chris, thank you so much. I also, Father Josh, I want to go right to Elizabeth in Los Altos, and we'll take these two together because Elizabeth is working on some of this local implementation. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Hi, Chris. I am the co-chair of a committee in our diocese called Stewards of Our Common Home. And it's kind of a lengthy title, but the common home theme, of course, Father Josh has already talked about, is the subtitle of Laudato Si, Care of Our Common Home. And personally, I'm just passionate about this. I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I think Father Josh told the story of another person who just said, what are we doing for our children and grandchildren? Mm-hmm. In our diocese, we are a small but powerful committee with great passion, to explain what I think Father Josh mentioned once, the Laudato Si Action Platform. His office has helped move a step toward implementation of the goals of Laudato Si by highlighting seven goals. And our first task has been to spread the word, but also to help people see that we actually are already doing some things. We just haven't grown in the awareness and recognized our intention. For example, I think over half our churches have solar installations, and that, of course, affects the economy, and the eco-economy is one of the seven goals. So we are not moving as fast as we would like. As Chris said, there's just kind of a passive resistance, and we just want to work harder to create, bring up this awareness.
I think other people in the climate movement probably will strongly identify with some of those things. Elizabeth, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, Father Josh, I guess that is, you know, they both kind of are, both Elizabeth and Chris, thank you for those calls, are both kind of gesturing at the same thing, which I do think a lot of climate campaigners feel, which is even people who are sort of like, oh, that's a good idea, we should do something about climate change, then don't actually execute or implement things that make meaningful change.
Yeah. No, thank you, Alex, and thanks to Chris and Elizabeth, you know, brilliant reflections. You know, in 2018, when a group of scientists came to see Pope Francis, and they said, "Thank you, Your Holiness, for the beautiful gift of Laudato Si." Then they said, "But it's not sufficient," because they were about to publish the 1.5 degree centigrade report that said, like, within 12 years, we really have to, you know, win this battle, you know, change the course of our civilization. So then we were informed about it, and we started working in collaboration. You know, the beauty of working at the Vatican is you can work with the entire world, you know, and I should also mention, you know, the US, you know, and Elizabeth mentioned she's working, you know, as a member of the Laudato Si Action Platform. The US, on the other hand, is responding very well. We have so many groups, and you know, even this conversation is possible thanks to some of our friends, you know, who really want to get the message of Laudato Si across. So in 2018, along with many others, we started working on an action platform. We said it's time to act. So it's called the Laudato Si Action Platform. We played around the number 7, because 7 is a biblical number of fullness, you know, 7 years, 7 days, 7 years, 7 sacraments, all that. And so we proposed 7 sectors, because building on the concept of common home, we need to involve everyone. So the first sector is families. Let's begin with our families. Second is parishes and dioceses. Chris mentioned about parishes and pastors. So a parish can become a Laudato Si parish. A diocese can become a Laudato Si parish. Third is schools and universities. And we have thousands of schools that have joined, hundreds of universities in the US. At St. Clair, the Santa Clara, if I spell well, they're part of the Laudato Si Action Platform. Also Loyola, Chicago, Georgetown, Washington, you know, so many universities. Mm-hmm. And I hope you would know the Jesuits. The Jesuits, as a religious order, said all their universities, all their schools, all their parishes are joining the Action Platform.
Yeah.
So third section, schools and universities. Fourth, hospitals, healthcare centers. Fifth, economy, businesses, farms, you know, everything to do with economy. Sixth, we put together groups, movements, NGOs, you know, communication centers, everyone. Seventh, religious orders like the Jesuits, Franciscans, Dominicans, and sisters, you know, so many religious orders are there. So 7 sectors. Then with 7 goals, that we respond to the cry of the earth, cry of the poor, we change lifestyles, we change economy, education, spirituality, and we do as a community. So 7 goals, and we do it in 7 years. Because politicians, by 2050, 2070, we'll do. That's not sufficient. We need to do it as soon as possible.
Yeah.
7 years, 7 sectors, led by like the SDGs, we call them Laudato Si goals, LSGs.
Yeah.
We can together change the world. So that's the first thing.
Hold on just 1 sec, Father Josh. We're talking about Pope Francis' call to action on climate change with Father Joshstrom Isaac Karithadam, who is the chair of philosophy of science and director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. We'll be back with more of your calls and comments right after the break.
Support for Forum is sponsored by Stanford's Master of Liberal Arts program. Have you found yourself reflecting on your life and education? Perhaps you think it's too late or you're too busy to earn a master's degree. Stanford's part-time MLA program is designed for anyone, from recent college grads to retirees, who'd like to pursue an interdisciplinary course of study in the liberal arts. MLA students also enjoy access to the world-class facilities on the Stanford campus. Information session held May 16th. Learn more at mla.stanford.edu.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about Pope Francis' call to action on climate change with one of the key members of his government around all things climate, Father Joshstrom Isaac Karithadam, who is the chair of philosophy of science and director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. We're getting your comments and calls as well about how what Father Josh is saying, how it's resonating with people, whether you're Catholic or not religious at all. You can give us a call. The number is 866-733-6786. Maybe you have questions about the implementation of Laudato Si, which was Pope Francis' encyclical on the need to address the climate crisis. You can also email forum@kqed.org or find us on social channels or over on our digital community on Discord. Let's bring in Father Josh. Let's bring in Anne in Livermore. Welcome.
Hi, greetings. First, I'm inspired by how the concept of common home resonates with indigenous worldviews from around the world, that everything is interconnected in a beautiful web of life. And it's so important that an institution as powerful as the Catholic Church is speaking to this. And secondly, I've been a climate activist for a long time and frustrated by the lack of movement politically when the science shows that the trajectory is so dire. But I came to realize that what was missing was reaching people through their hearts. And often the way that can happen is through faith-based organizations and spirituality. So I'm curious to know, has the inclusion of Laudato Si changed kind of the fabric or the feeling within the Catholic Church about attitudes toward our common home? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And great question. Thank you so much. Beautifully phrased. Father Josh?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you. And beautiful question, beautiful reflection that you made. And I'm personally convinced that we need to sit at the feet of indigenous communities, you know, because even now they are like 5% of humanity, of the world's population, hardly. And thanks to them, nearly 82% of biodiversity is protected around the world. So, and I mean, we are grateful to them. And also not just for that, you know, not just functionally, but also for that, this very rich worldview, you know, that, you know, the famous saying of the indigenous chief that we cannot sell our lands because, you know, they're like our relatives, our mothers. We don't sell our mothers or sisters, or, you know, and that's a different approach. And for them, land is home, and they are community, like, you know, they're all in it all together and they share. So I really want to thank you for having brought in the indigenous communities. Then the faith communities, and you know, sometimes I do share your frustration, Anna, like, you know, being in this area nearly 20-25 years and see the way the nature or climate is going, you get frightened, you get, you know, so frustrated. But what gives me hope are two elements. One is, as you mentioned, about faith communities coming together, and the great news or the truth is that even now, 83% of humanity belongs to one religion or another, you know, 83%. So we are a huge constituency. And in all faith traditions, earth is seen as sacred. It's God's, you know, it's not ours, it's God's. And it's permeated by God's presence. Again, indigenous are very strong on that. And again, faith communities, all of them promote simplicity, moderation, sharing. And these are the values we need. Like, you know, these are the values we need. Yeah. And also when it comes from, you know, just as you were asking the question, I was reminded of the Muslim community in Indonesia. A few years ago, let's become a classical case. You know, they had the problem of deforestation. And so the government brought in laws and, you know, police were guarding the forest, but nothing, it was not helping, you know, the deforestation was going on. Until a group of imams came together, Muslim, you know, faith leaders, their priests, imams, and they issued a fatwa saying that whoever cuts down trees will be, you know, thrown out of the community, will be expelled. And that worked, you know, they managed to arrest the problem of deforestation, mm-hmm. because faith, I mean, it's probably not, you know, it's it could be a negative force, but that helped. Mm. Imagine if faith communities were to come together and say it is God's common, it's God's creation, it's, in it we are all together. And that's the one element that gives me hope, and we are coming together.
Father Josh, on the point about sitting at the feet of indigenous communities, Kenichi over on the Discord has a kind of more pointed question, which is, how much land does the Catholic Church own in California, and what are the church's plans to give it to indigenous people or manage it for indigenous ecosystems?
Yeah, great, good question, Alex. And personally, I wouldn't know. Like, but then I think it would be important to look into it, and I think you will have the full support of Pope Francis, because in 2019, for the first time, we had a synod on the Amazon in the Vatican. So in 2018, we had a Laudato Si conference organized by us, our department. And for the first time, we brought indigenous leaders into the Vatican. So there are like nearly a dozen of them came. Then the year after, we had an entire synod, a month-long meeting, just on the Amazon, because Amazon is vital for the entire world. But then thanks to Pope Francis, you know, we brought the indigenous to the center. So they were the leaders. We also had scientists and political leaders who came. So I'm sure I cannot enter into the details of the question you asked, but then you would have the full support of both friends.
Yeah, I mean, I guess part of what I hear in Kenichi's question is also saying, you know, the church has real resources, right? I mean, it has land, it has money, it has power. Like, what are the ways in which the church is using those things to both try to address climate change, but also to embody or enact this partnership with indigenous communities?
Yeah, no, that's very, very well put. You know, it's like conversion begins with ourselves, you know. So the one reason for the Laudato Si action platform was also that, you know, we ask governments to change, political leaders to change. Let's begin with ourselves. And the beauty of the Catholic Church is we are universal. We are all over the world. And as you said, we do have lands. Imagine the number of schools we run, the number of hospitals we run, the number of universities we run. So if we can all come together, I think that will make a huge difference. And I know little about the Amazon and, you know, in Brazil. I have seen that church has, we have stood by the indigenous communities, and I can personally vouch for it. I mean, you know, some of our missionaries, and you know, we have promoted the local language. It's true that we in places like Canada or elsewhere, I mean, it's also connected to the political motives. We have, you know, let's also say we have deprived the indigenous of their languages, of their culture, but there have been also beautiful examples, and I can vouch the last 20 or 30 years. That the churches, and I mentioned about a movie on Laudato Si that we made, and it's about four characters coming from, and the first character is...
Hold on, I just want to, we have full board of calls, so I just want to get to like more people. They've got more questions for you. hold on just one second. We've got Robert in Pacifica. Welcome, Robert.
Oh, good morning, Alex and Alexis. Yes, my question is, it's both a comment and a question. Alexis, you mentioned that the left and the right in particular, is a kind of a problem with greenhouse gas promoting industries. But the left has very much been against nuclear power, which is really the safe and sane solution. The left has been promoting primarily wind and solar, which is both unreliable and non-dispatchable in a technical term. So nuclear is really scalable and is a solution. My question is, would the church support nuclear power? Do they have a view on God's gift of nuclear power or particular types of solutions?
Yeah, Robert, it's a really interesting question. I have many thoughts on nuclear power myself, but I will save them and let Father Josh answer.
Thank you. Thank you, Alex. And yeah, very pointed, very, very clear question. And incidentally, you know, this question was asked by one of my students this morning at the university. So, you know, we reflected over it. And I would say the way I replied was this, you know, like the only problem with nuclear energy is right now we use the fission technology, like, you know, whereas stars like our own sun uses a fusion technology. And we are still to master that. People are working on it. And if you were to master the fusion technology, I think we'll have, you know, endless energy without any pollution. The problem with nuclear technology as of now is what we call the nuclear waste. You know, and you know what happened in Fukushima in Japan. You know, a country like Japan, which you know, with very advanced technology. So that's always a risk, like, and we haven't found a way to store away. So we are pushing the problem to future generations, like, you know.
And Father Josh, you know, on a deeper level too, right? I mean, the Pope Francis is really clear that he is opposed to this idea of like the technocratic paradigm that we can just invent our way out of it. Like that if we just had the right nuclear power, then climate change would go away and the rest of the in environmental harms that human beings are doing in you know, to our common home would still exist, though, even if we had nuclear power. So how do you balance trying to think about these particular technologies, you know, like a next generation nuclear power and the need for some deeper reformation? You know, I think that it was the African bishops who called climate change a structural sin. So, you know, how to think about it on that kind of moral or spiritual level.
Yeah. Thank you, Alex. You never anticipated me. You know, I was about to come to that. And, you know, a structural sin, Pope Francis does speak also in Laudato Dei. He brings it up again. Yeah, I think you brought out both the elements. You know, the one thing is very often when we speak about nuclear plants, as of now, you know, they would take us at least a decade or so to build them. And they are like going to cost billions and billions of dollars as of now. Like, so all those constraints are there. But I think the deeper problem is also, you know, we could have this false belief that technology can solve us. At the same time, I would take, you know, like also a balanced approach, because also in Laudato Si, Pope Francis, he says, you know, technology is also, if you were to go back to Aristotle, it's techne, it's an expression of human creativity. And you know, he speaks in Laudato Si about the beauty of a plane, for example, you know, it's of an aeroplane, you know. So what I teach philosophy of science, and what I see is we need to balance both. And sometimes, you know, creativity can, you know, and you know, I spoke about deforestation, and we have satellites, you know, that can measure very accurately. We speak about sea level rise. We have satellites that tell us by how many millimeters the sea level is rising, like, you know. So I think at the same time, I really liked your point. It's the approach. And it's interesting. Laudato Si speaks a lot about humility. And I often speak about ecological virtues. And for me, the most important ecological virtue is humility. It's humus, humilitatis in Latin. It's also adama in Hebrew. And that takes us back to where, you know, like the indigenous, back to the land, back to the earth. And when we are humble, I think, you know, we will reduce our consumption. We will reduce our domination. And domination is not just over the natural world. We dominate over the poor people, over the indigenous communities. So how to cultivate deep humility and along with humility also other virtues.
Let's bring in another call. Let's go to Mercedes in Oakland. Welcome.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Yes, I'm appreciative of the fact that the Catholic Church, as one of the wealthiest institutions on the planet, is taking a stand on climate change and advocating to reduce the crisis. And it's wonderful to hear that. However, I'm disturbed by the unfortunate hypocrisy that is built in here with the Church opposing birth control and abortion, and which, of course, limits the ability of people to manage their family size. And given that we know that human activity is the key driver of carbon emissions and hence climate change, climate crisis, there is a link between population growth and the climate crisis. And obviously this has more layers. There's more to discuss with all of the causality in terms of what percentages of the people are consuming the most resources. But nonetheless, there's a direct link. And I find this very troubling.
Yeah. Mercedes, thank you. I know that Pope Francis has done some thinking about this. Father Josh?
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for a very, very frank question. And interestingly, it was one of the questions we discussed this morning. We are in Rome this evening, so at the Salesian University. Yeah, it's, I mean, all of us agree that it's the problem is our human impact, you know, our ecological footprint. And population does count. But then, you know, I used to think like this 10, 12 years ago. Till I read someone like Shoaible Chakravarty of Princeton University, you know, now there are groups that calculate what is our impact, you know. So they say, like, if you were to just work on the population, we will reach something like between 16 to 25% of emissions can come down. But the other 70-80% is from our consumption, you know, like, you know, and these days with our students, we are seeing about the ecological footprint that says that a country like Qatar consumes 9 planets a year. So it's by 11th of February, they have already consumed resources for this year. I know in the US, it's like 5.2 planets. Europe is 3 planets. And not to offend you, like, you know, the Shoaible Chakravarty.
Yeah, I think all the Bay Area people are like, yeah, don't worry.
Yeah, like, you know, and so we have, I think we need both, like, and with life, I mean, for Francis, and he's very consistent, I'm just speaking, I'm being his, you know, spokesperson, he says we need to defend life at all levels, and I think that is the incongruency of most of us, like, you know, I mean, like, of both the political spectrum, that, you know, the pro-life people are all for life. But when it comes to migrants, when it comes to death penalty, when it comes to elderly people, you know, they are not concerned at all. Like, I mean, you know, and Democrats, so we are so much worried. We are about pro-choice, but then, you know, we say the unborn child is the most defenseless form of life. Like, so for Francis, it's like an integral ecology. You know, it's just life from beginning until death, and that's his own person, if you were to see, like, you know.
Yeah, thank you so much, Father Josh. Again, we've been talking about Laudato Si and Laudato Deum, these, you know, kind of remarkable documents produced by Pope Francis about addressing the climate crisis. And we've been joined this morning by one of the people tasked with implementing that vision, Father Joshstrom Isaac Karithadam, Chair of Philosophy of Science and Director of the Institute of Social and Political Sciences at the Salesian Pontifical University in Rome. Thank you so much, Father Josh.
Thank you, Alex. You led us brilliantly. Thank you. And thanks to all those who joined. Thank you.
So interesting people's thoughts on this. If this did sound fascinating to you, you can look into the online course the church is offering. Just search, you know, online course Integral Ecology. You'll find it. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.